Hey everybody, join us as we delve into our favorite dark tales and paranormal mysteries.
Venture with us beyond the safe places that exist in daylight as we go
beyond the shadows. True crime.
Paranormal.
Hauntings.
UFOs.
Cryptids and unsolved mysteries.
Conspiracy theories.
Past lives.
Reincarnation.
And all the like are just a few of the topics that we will tackle.
If it haunts your fucking dreams, then it will be on our show.
Shadows where you found me at. You can't see me in the deepest blacks. When your heart start racing and you see the cracks, all these creepy things that you might attract. All the demons be where the action's at. So listen up if you want it. UFOs, all them ghosts, we got everything that you want. Whoa.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is?
Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 76 of Beyond the Shadows.
Welcome back, Shadow Cloud.
Shadow Cloud.
There's a lot more where that came from, folks.
Sorry, guys. I apologize.
Yeah, I'm not going to be down for a while. So before we get started, we wanted to wish a happy one-year anniversary to our good friends, the Spiritual Sisters podcast.
Yes, they started off just after we did, and we've been friends ever since the start.
Man. We love
like a couple
ladies.
Months in, and Nicole reached out to us, and we've been going through it together. So, yes.
If you haven't checked them out yet, definitely do that. They put on a great show.
Yeah, they really do.
So in the news this week.
Some good ones this week.
So we had a solar eclipse this past week across most of North America. I think it might have been all of North America.
Did you get the chance to see it?
I did. I was a little disappointed. I thought it was going to get like full on dark.
I thought it'd get a little darker too. Happen. Yeah.
So my son brought home his school glasses, the dark ones.
Yeah, mine too.
I was gonna look at it wearing shades, but he brought home his glasses, so I put them on. And but if I wasn't wearing the glasses, I wouldn't have known it was eclipse because the sun out of my regular eye looked normal.
Yeah.
And so during the eclipse, it didn't really get dark. It was cool.
It got a little bit darker, but yeah, it wasn't like
wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So a news channel in Mexico, RCG Media 24/7, the channel was covering the event live, and they were using footage sent in by viewers as well. So apparently no one checked the videos before they aired because one of them was a guy using his nutsack to try and block out the sun.
That's the best, though.
He slipped it in there. Good for him, you know?
And they aired it.
Yeah.
They did.
They slipped by. So the scary part is that he was right zoomed in, and it still failed because you could still see the sun from around. Yeah. So he's not doing too well for himself.
He didn't pull it out. No.
But he gave it a shot.
And then next, Uranus.
So next up, Sierra Leone has declared an emergency over the drug Kush.
This is messed up.
Yes. So it's a psychoactive blend of addictive substances, the chief among them being human bones.
Human bones.
Yeah.
They grind up human bone and they mix it in with a plethora of other drugs.
They do. And it's really fucking people up. I think I didn't write down the number, but it's killed thousands over just the last couple months. So it sounds like it's like a heroin type of.
It sounds like a dick pill is what it sounds like with the bone in it.
It does. In fact, they
like
call,
a gas station dick pill.
They call it the zombie. There is called the zombie drug. But since you're making it out of fucking human bones, I guess that stands to reason.
Yeah, there.
But it actually turns them into zombies. That's why they call it that.
I think the drug would do it without the bone. I don't know if the bone needs has actually anything to do with it.
I don't know if it does or it doesn't.
I can't imagine human bones make you hallucinate or anything like that. But
I wouldn't think.
So weird.
So they've been tightening up security around cemeteries in the area to stop the gangs from digging up the graves.
Yeah, the grave robbers, but for the actual bones this time.
Yeah, I don't know what they're getting out of the actual bones. So they got their little recipe. What the bones bring to it, I don't know. That doesn't say. But the actual drug in its final form is super dangerous.
Yeah, it really is. Like you said, people are dying like crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had to tighten up security on like every graveyard and
all over the country or the city because they're just digging up graves left and right. So
that's just insane.
So for our last story, police in Oxfordshire, UK, recently thought that the sirens on their cars were malfunctioning because they heard sirens coming from them constantly, even when none were being used. But it turns out it was actually a bird located nearby the police station that had learned to mimic their silence perfectly.
Can you imagine? Some of these birds are just crazy with what they can do.
They're talented.
They really are. I was watching a video just recently on Instagram. It was about this guy who raised a crow. They are like, they say like as intelligent as like a 5 or 6 year old. I think they're smarter, man. Yeah. But the noises that they can mimic is just insane.
They don't know for sure, but they think this bird might have been a crow. The video isn't close enough to identify it. Some people say it was a starling. Some people think it was a crow. But either way, this bird was talented, and he mimics the siren exactly.
Yeah, so you can actually listen to the video if you look it up. I'll try to post it.
I found it on Sky News, but I'm sure it's in plenty of other places.
But yeah, you can actually hear it, and it sounds just like the
it does.
It's just like the sirens.
They got some talented birds in the UK.
They really do.
We recently did the swearing parrots, which was one of my favorites.
Birds are lame here in the U.S.
I know, they suck.
Birds shit in my yard on my car.
Birds in my yard don't say shit.
Not a thing.
I expect to walk out the front door and hear, fuck off, fuck off. But they don't. Not yet.
We got a bunch of crows right out here in the yard, and they wait because we set the trash out on the porch before I bring it out, and they get it every time. Every time. All right, bud. So what do you got for us this week?
So this is one our OG fan, Margaret, from back in the day. She actually requested this one from ways back. So,
yeah, excellent. Margaret, she's one of our favorite, man. She's been with us from the beginning.
So. Absolutely. So this one's for you, Margaret. And there is some fucking brutal names in this one.
Yeah, you put it to him there.
So that tells you we love you. Because I started looking over this one when she requested it, and I was like, fuck that. When I started reading it, but I'm going to try to tangle this one for you, Margaret. So
buckle up. He's going to be pronouncing names like I do. Let's hope I'm not going to let him take them out. So,
all right.
Let's
we'll
do it.
Back, guys.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is? It's here.
Miriam Solakiotis isn't a household name by any means, but she may just well be one of the most prolific serial killers in history. And if that isn't scary enough, she was also a nun, who would later be dubbed the most evil woman in the history of mankind.
Wow, you hear about nuns being awful in like Catholic schools and stuff like that?
Yeah.
This is a whole nother level.
Now they go like the horror movie The Nun. So nuns are just kind of scary anyway.
Yeah, I have a story from when I was a kid about a nun, but I'm not going to go into it now.
So the origins of her story are unclear. She was born around 1883 in Karateia, Greece, about 31 miles from Athens. Her birth name was Marina, and her early life was said to be one of great poverty, but the details are very sketchy. She was said to have worked on both farms and in factories in her early years. Her story begins to come more into focus around the year 1900, when she becomes a nun within the Greek Orthodox Church. Around 1906, she became close with a bishop named Matthew Carpathicus in Verserna. When she met him, he was struggling with the doctrines and tenets of the Greek Old Calendarist Church. When the church adopted a new calendar, which they still use today, Carpathicus split with the church and formed a new sect, which makes him a schismatic. Miriam Solakiotis followed him out the door, and they formed a new monastery together in 1927.
You weren't kidding. You got some names in this one, don't
you?
Oh,
yeah, for sure. And it's a lot of religious terms, which, you know, I've been to church a couple times in my life. I've taken a few religion classes, but I don't have a lot of background in religion. So
right.
I'm learning a lot of terms I'm not familiar with, like the schismatic.
Yeah, I don't
basically
know that
means
either.
He just split. So there's a church that he's been a part of. His beliefs split, so he splits, which makes him a schismatic. So,
okay.
To think that such drama stems from a calendar seems hard to believe. So we'll look into that a bit further because it's important to this case. So the Julian calendar was introduced by Julius Caesar and developed with the help of an astronomer. It took effect in 46 BC and averages 365.25 days a year. The calculations they used were slightly off and overstated the length of a year by 11 minutes and 14 seconds. Now, this doesn't sound like all that much, but by the 1600s, that error had amounted to 10 days, leaving seasons and equinoxes well off where they should be. So a new calendar was introduced under the order of Pope Gregory XIII. To fix the error, it was decided that October 4th, 1852 would be followed by October 15th, 1852. Due to this calendar revision being issued by the Roman Catholic Church, many Protestant countries initially rejected this new calendar. It was implemented by Italy, Portugal, Spain, and the Roman Catholic German states the year after it was introduced. The Protestant German states in 1699, Great Britain in its colonies in 1752, and finally by Greece, which is where the story is set, in 1923.
Can you imagine you're running 10 days different than people in other parts of the world?
Yeah, like a full
How 10 bad days. Would that fuck things up?
But when they went to fix it, everybody rejected it, or a lot of people rejected it, which is where we are now.
So. Right. I mean, that's you got people in one part of the world that are on like the 10th and the other ones are, that's nuts.
Way off. So by the time it was finally implemented in Greece, the calendar now diverged by a full 14 days. So Wednesday, the 15th of February, 1923, would be followed by Thursday, March 1st. So in short, the old calendarists rejected this change, and that brings us to this new monastery. Carpathicus and Sulicaitis formed the Panagia. This one's fucking brutal. Paphgavun Agiatrisa. I'm only going to say that once. Monastery.
Isn't that on Avatar, the movie?
It's the only time I'm going to say that.
I'm pretty sure that's the planet, right?
So that was to honor the presentation of the Virgin Mary. That's why they said they started it. But it was also made abundantly clear that they intended to support the old calendar movement financially. By this time, Matthew was already 66 years old and in declining health. So Marian began taking over more and more of his responsibilities. Her increased presence and authority was presented as being due to her strong character, as opposed to being a result of any of his health issues. She was called Mother Superior Marian of Carathia. The convent began focusing their efforts and energies on acquiring financial investments. New members were required to relinquish any and all money and property that they possessed in adherence with the church's vow of poverty. By 1939, Matthew had left the day-to-day operations of the monastery to Marian. At times, he was away in prison, doing extended fasts, voluntarily staying in deprivation isolation cells, or seeing to other tasks away from the monastery. During World War II, he became sick, and when his health failed even further in 1950, her influence and control over him grew even stronger. On his deathbed, he was visited by Metropolitan Christosomos of Florina, a fellow old calendarist bishop, but one he had fallen out with. He began to sit up in his bed and tried to speak, when Sulicaitis burst into the room, followed by her fellow nuns, and demanded Christosomos and his entourage leave at once. It seems he was likely trying to heal old wounds, but he never got the chance, as he died only days later. And so she was now the abbot of the monastery. During this period, she was said to have begun wearing a more chaste version of the apostle Nick. If you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, neither do I.
No, I don't.
I had to look this shit up.
Wait, before you go, what year did you just say? Did you say 1950?
Yeah, so Matthew.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Matthew.
I'm trying to – when you do these stories, I got to place the time frame in my head, and I was thinking further back.
So Matthew's getting very, very sick in 1950. So
okay.
She's taking more control. So the fact that she's wearing a more chaste version basically just means she's wearing a much more stricter version of the nun robe that you generally see. Now, in the Greek Orthodox Church, they don't have the white overhang that you see in the traditional nun. It's all black. But her version basically wraps just above her eyes to down around her mouth. So it's basically a circle. You can only see her immediate face.
So I pulled some pictures of her and stuff. It almost looks like the Muslim type.
It does.
Other than you can see the face. You can see more than just the eyes. But
but it's completely black, so you don't get the white.
Yep.
I think that was their style to begin with, but she's wearing a much stricter version than even what most of them wear at the time. So by the time Carpathicus had passed away, Madame Superior had begun to develop a reputation for being very vigorous and quite ruthless. When new members came to the church, they were required to make a vow to rid themselves of all evil and commit fully to their church. They were expected to confess all of their sins, undertake long fasts, and endure periods of prolonged silence. These aspects aren't all that different from other churches, but Mother Miriam took everything much further than that. She was willing to do whatever it took to extort all of the financial assets of her followers: sleep deprivation, food deprivation, beatings, threats, blackmail, and even torture. She generally preferred to target people from wealthy families, as their estates would bring more financial resources to the church. She would then embezzle the money, and many times the donor would wind up dead.
Sounds like an awesome church.
Yeah, it does.
You know?
It does. So you guys should look it up. Yeah, they're great people. So overall, her scheme was simple. Once a new member came forward to join the church, they were quickly and deliberately isolated. It was necessary for them to sever contact from family members and those from their previous sinful pasts. This way, there was no one watching and no one to speak up for the victims. Not all of those who came forward were looking to join the church or for religious guidance either. In her twisted plan, she made it known to all that they could seek treatment for tuberculosis at the convent. The high altitude of their location would be the perfect spot to recuperate from the disease. In reality, though, tuberculosis is highly contagious and a deadly lung infection, and there were no doctors at the convent to treat patients. In fact, it's said that doctors weren't even allowed on the premises or to see patients at all, or were sought out only to sign death certificates.
That's crazy. You know, I was just listening to something about the Stanley Hotel. It's true back then that they thought the thing for tuberculosis was fresh air and high altitudes and getting out there, because that's how the Stanley was built.
That's where they sent Doc Holliday from the Tombstone story.
Right.
To the mountains.
Yep.
It made sense.
They did believe it.
It wasn't reality.
The sanatoriums had like big open areas where they could be out and, you know, to get the sun and the
– But in the sanatoriums, they actually had doctors.
Yeah, there's actually doctors.
She didn't have any. At this convent, there was nothing there. She was bringing a scam. There was, come up here, there's nothing to treat them whatsoever. The treatment she promised was just another tool she used to lure in more victims and collect more assets. Once she felt that she had all the nuns from her convent firmly in her control, she actually sent the church's monks out into the Greek countryside to seek out wealthy spinsters, old widows, and families of means for conversion. No longer content to wait for her victims to come to her, she would now go out and find them. She was growing bolder and darker. Mother Rasputin, as she came to be unaffectionately known, had been ruthlessly running the convent for over a decade by 1949. And it was now the rumors began to spread beyond the walls about what might be going on within. Locals had long reported to have heard screams and moans from inside the walls, but authorities were just now beginning to take notice. An anonymous complaint had been made by a young woman whose mother had been a recent convert to the church. Her will had been changed, leaving everything behind to Miriam. The daughter claimed that this was something her mother would never have done unless she had been forced to do so. There is little to say what became of this investigation, but it seems this was the one that put Mother Rasputin on the police's radar. Mm. So we don't know where this one went, but this got them started.
This is when they noticed.
Yeah.
Started taking notice.
1949, the FBI got involved. Semela Spiridis was an 18-year-old who had been born in Greece, but later lived in Toledo, Ohio. The FBI traced her to the monastery. Her father called both the Greek embassy and authorities in Ohio to report that she had been lured to the convent by a nun that he called Mariam Zafriopoulos. She had been in the U.S. to collect $10,000 that had been left to the monastery and had made contact with his daughter while there. He later reported that he had been in contact with his daughter after she disappeared, but he never stated whether she had or had not been to the convent. So I believe his daughter lived. She kind of disappears off the radar at this point. On the night of December 4th, 1950, almost 100 police officers descended on the convent in a full-scale raid. They were accompanied by a deputy prosecutor, a judge, and even a coroner in an operation that lasted throughout the night and half of the next day. They were actually there to investigate the illegal export of olive oil to Cyprus and the illegal importing of tires. 100 officers and a coroner seems excessive in that instance.
They're investigating the church for selling olive oil?
And exporting swapping tires. But they brought a coroner.
Yeah, that's
right. Where does a coroner fit into that? That's what they brought. But what they found far exceeded their expectations. They found a number of elderly, malnourished, sick, and naked women chained in the basement. They also rescued 37 children. Now, this number differs. I've looked at a lot of stories. It's 37, it's 46, it's 45, but there were a lot of children. So 37 is kind of the number I settled on.
Wow.
Along with the living victims, they uncovered the remains of at least 170 bodies. Those that were still alive accused Mariam of torture, blackmail, starvation, and false imprisonment. The children had to be pried away from the clutches of the nuns, where they were to be shipped off to orphanages. This is where a policeman said, quote, where their future was not much better, end quote. I guess that's true, you know.
Yeah, the kids that went to the orphanage didn't. Yeah. It was rough. Real rough. Holy cow, this is a woman of God. And
she's not a woman of God. I mean, supposedly. She was by definition, but this woman is a.
Wow.
If there's evil in the world, this is it. Her trial began on September 4th, 1951. She was not facing trial for the extreme abuse and torture of her surviving victims. She also wasn't being tried for the deaths of any of the 170 bodies recovered. She had been found in possession of over $750,000 in cash and held the deeds to over 300 farms and houses. But she wasn't being tried for that either. Prosecutors weren't sure that they could obtain convictions for any of these offenses due to the generally voluntary nature of monasticism. So she was tried only on the illegal exporting of olive oil to Cyprus and the illegal importing of tires.
Oh, so that's why they got him on that. Okay.
And she received 26 months in prison.
26?
For everything that they just saw, that's what she got, 26 months in prison.
In the dark forest lies a secret, told in broken stories by those who bore witness, a monster, a murder, a long-forgotten homestead. I'm on the search for the ghosts who haunt these places, and I want you to come along. Welcome to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Here I take an active approach to finding places that people might warn you not to go to. Haunted trails, abandoned towns, old taverns where you might catch a glimpse of a long-deceased patron. Look, you're probably not going to find me trekking through Arizona looking to have a run-in with a skinwalker, and you certainly won't catch me playing with a Ouija board. But I have spent at least the last 10 years seeking out creepy, haunted, and abandoned places to explore. So lace up your boots, grab a working flashlight, and join me as I tell the tales, hike the trails, and grab a cold pint at the local tavern. You can find the podcast on Apple, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. You can find show updates on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook, and YouTube. And also check out the blog at TalesTrailsAndTaverns.com. And now, I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
What the hell, dude? They could have got... All right, go ahead.
We're not done yet. We're not done yet. But it doesn't get a lot better. Although she had only been thus far tried on by the courts for her far less serious crimes, the court of public opinion and the media were largely against Mother Rasputin. The media attention brought forth more victims and more accusations of theft and torture against the church. Prosecutors decided to use this new testimony to charge the abbess, with several more crimes. She, along with 13 other nuns and monks, were charged with homicide, fraud, abuse, extortion, forging of wills, blackmail, and torture. Sulakiotis was also charged for the murder of one monk and three nuns. So this is directly, she was charged for these murders. At her trial, Miriam wore an Orthodox icon, which depicted the now deceased Matthew, who had been glorified in death and was now called St. Matthew the New Confessor. During her trial, her defense attorney, Panos Panayiotakos, argued that people did surrender their property when joining the monastery because they were required to, according to their vow of poverty, and this they had done willingly. He also tried to argue that all of the properties had been placed in her name. Yes, he admitted that, but only because there was no official legal person behind the monastery. So, come on, man.
Yeah, really.
He also produced a letter that he claimed was from Field Marshal Harold Alexander. In the letter, he thanked the monastery. This is Harold Alexander that's thanking the monastery for their heroic aid to British soldiers trying to escape Greece during the Axis occupation in World War II. So she was found guilty in her second trial and received a 10-year sentence to be served concurrently with her first sentence.
So she got another 8 years.
So 8 years, yes. So she's now been sentenced essentially to 10 years total. For everything that she's done, she's gotten 10 years.
You can't convince me that there's 170 fucking bodies and you can't pin that on her.
No, I agree with you.
I'm getting mad.
No, I get it. So strangely, she faced yet a third trial shortly after the conclusion of the second, where she was found guilty of illegal detention, and she was given an additional 4 years in prison, which still only brings us to 14 years. So all told, in three trials for homicide, extortion, torture, embezzlement, illegal detention, blackmail, fraud, forgery, and all kinds of other shit, she was given a grand total of fucking 14 years in prison. That's it.
That's unbelievable.
She received her sentence without a motion. She merely crossed herself and said a silent revenge prayer to her Saint Matthew. Now, if possible, she would have potentially faced further prosecution going forward. But she passed away in 1954 at the age of 71 at Averov Prison. Right up until her death, she maintained that she was innocent of all charges and accusations. She described all accusations as, quote, satanic fictions. She was buried on the grounds of the convent, not far away from the grave of her beloved Bishop Matthew Carpathicus. The total deaths that she was responsible for is impossible to determine, but a total as high as 500 has been suggested.
Jesus, that many, and they can't link those to her.
Oh, it's pathetic. I don't think they even tried. This investigation was a joke from the get-go.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I mean, everything she did, and she being tried for the illegal export of olive oil. I mean, come on.
The thing is there's no way she did it by herself. You know, it's weird how if one person's evil, like this bitch is.
It spreads like poison.
It's like, yeah.
It does.
Anyway. It's crazy how, you can draw these other people in, and they all think it's okay.
It does. It spreads.
What's that prison experiment with the college that did the school that did the prison experiment where the like half of the students were guards and the other half were prisoners, and then they really took over those roles? You don't know that one?
No, I don't know that one.
It's a famous case anyways, but it just shows you that when people are put in a position like that, that shit can happen. It's just nuts.
No, I agree with that for sure. I don't know the experiment you're talking about, but I know what the theory you're talking
where
about.
Where I'm going with it, yeah.
So authorities found that at least 177 of the deceased were due to negligent homicide after they had sought treatment for their lethal lung infections in her non-existent treatment facility. At least 27 more are thought to have been murdered at the convent. Officially, she was only convicted for 7 murders out of those scores who died at the convent. And these are the ones she was convicted of. The Baca family were convinced by Sulikiotis to join the convent and hand over all of their property. Once they became aware of the deplorable conditions which they would be living in, they told her that they would be taking their children and leaving. Well, there was no way she was letting that money walk out the door, and she placed both parents in a solitary confinement. They were placed in the cells that had previously held tuberculosis patients and given very little to eat. After 6 months, Mrs. Baca would die, followed not long afterwards by her husband. Mr. and Mrs. Fuck, this one's hard.
You can do it. Come on.
Panagiotopoulou.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Nailed it. We're forced to sign over their property after coming to the convent before being locked away like the Bacas, left to die of starvation. Mrs. Mikaloku came to the monastery to seek treatment for her tuberculosis. She was never given any treatment and was never seen by a single doctor. After she signed over title to her property, she died in the cell. And the other two murders that she was convicted of were fellow nuns, so no one was immune from her wrath and her greed. These are her people. Sister Theodore was accused by Sulikiotis of misconduct. She ordered other nuns to beat her as her penance, which they did, to the point of causing internal hemorrhaging and death.
Yep, see, they went right along with it, yeah. And did what she wanted.
A drink in the Kool-Aid. Sister Maria, likewise, received a fatal beating after falling afoul of Mother Rasputin. After Miriam Sulikiotis died, there was an organized protest led by her followers who continued to proclaim her innocence. Old calendarism was outlawed in Greece, so they had to take their beliefs underground. But the convent continued to operate, and girls continued to disappear. This is even after she died.
So they carried on after she was done.
So, yeah, they don't even know who the next abbess was. To this day, they went really underground, but they still continue to operate. Several girls are known to have expressed their desire to go to the convent after she died, only to never be seen again. So there is several girls that disappeared after she died. The monastery is still in operation today.
Oh, shit. No way.
Yes. But none of the nuns there obviously were alive during the time of Mother Rasputin. However, they still to this day hold on to the fact that Miriam Sulikiotis was innocent of all accusations and charges. She was someone who devoted herself to helping the sick and the poor and should be hailed as a saint. It was the male monks and bishops who were jealous of her wealth and power who committed the crimes that they then turned and accused her of. This is what they're saying. The others who came to the monastery were already sick and old when they arrived, and that's why they died. Nothing to do with being denied treatment. Yeah. They were just sick. 177 of them just arrived old and sick, and they died. What are you going to do? It just happens. It's an accident. It's an accident.
Oops.
No explanation was offered for how the titles of some 500 properties ended up in her name alone, if it was others who committed the crimes. nor how scores of witnesses and survivors pointed the finger at her and her alone for the atrocities they endured. Mother Sokolaitis was an evil nun like no other.
Yeah, no kidding. That is nuts. Up to 500.
Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Kelly.
And if you're looking for a super fun, awesome podcast to listen to, check us out.
All things outrageously dark, scary, beautiful, and totally true.
Well, 500, probably 500 people died at the property for sure.
Hey, some of them could have been tuberculosis.
Well, they really were, but that was the tuberculosis patients are still negligent homicide because you encouraged them to come there
and did
for non-existent treatment.
Yeah.
So even in the cases where she was innocent, she was still a piece of shit.
Oh, right. And I looked it up. It's a Stanford prison experiment, and it happened in August 1971. I might actually do something about that case.
Stanford?
It was a Stanford prison experiment. So, anyways.
All right. So, I got one short other story to follow. That one ran a little shorter than I thought it would. So, we got one other evil nun. Cecile Bombeek was born to a Catholic peasant family in Belgium in 1933. When she was 24, she joined the Apostolic Congregation of St. Joseph in Wetteren. She took on the name Sister Godfrida and worked as a nurse at a retirement home. She worked in the section known as the Chronic, where the sickest and the neediest patients were housed.
Dr. Dre was one of them.
Yeah, Snoop was in the back, just cheeching the fuck out of him. Through hard work and dedication, she rose steadily and gained a good reputation, and by 1967, she was made the head nurse. By 1970, she began to complain about intense headaches and was prescribed painkillers, to which she became addicted. Her mother superior turned a blind eye to her addictions because she was so needed in her work. By 1974, the headaches had become worse, and she went to see a specialist who diagnosed a tumor in her brain, which was removed in the 1974 surgery. Her headaches continued, however, and her behavior dramatically changed. She began stealing drugs and falsifying prescriptions to get more. She began drinking heavily, too. She took Sister Mathau as a lover, and they frequented sex shops together. She began to wear provocative clothing and make sexual advances on her female staff. I mean, you're talking like a real dramatic change in her baby.
Yeah, no kidding.
Valuables began to disappear on her unit too. On several occasions, she was caught abusing elderly patients. The deaths on the unit averaged 13 a year, but spiked to 21 in 1977. Leon Mathis complained about a digestion issue before being given an injection by Sister Godfrida and dying not long afterwards. Other nurses became suspicious about the deaths and the strange happenings around the unit, and they began making entries in a secret journal about it. When they presented their concerns to the hospital's chair, he dismissed them as, quote, foolish bitches plotting against Sister Godfrida, end quote. Yet only days later, 79-year-old Irma DeBacher died after being given a shot by Sister Godfrida. The hospital chair changed course and sent her off to a rehab facility. While she was away, he informed other staff to remain silent about the scandal because, quote, what's done is done. We can't help them now.
Wow.
While she was away, she sent a Christmas card to her coworkers saying, quote, see you soon. When they realized she intended to return, they approached authorities with their concerns about her actions. They were able to describe the abuse they witnessed, as well as her drinking on the job and using cocaine and morphine. Upon looking into it, her prescription frauds were uncovered, and she was soon arrested. Upon questioning, she admitted to 3 murders, telling police, quote, they had been too difficult at night, but that she had murdered them sweetly.
Wow.
So she was charged with 3 murders, but it was determined that perhaps as many as 17 deaths could be attributed to her. It was later discovered that she did not have a tumor, and there was not one in her scans. It's likely that her doctor told both her and her family that it was a tumor, so she believed it was. And when the growth turned out to be otherwise, he did not inform her of his mistake. So whether the change in her behavior came from her belief that she was dying or as a side effect of the surgery is impossible to say.
That's weird. Well, and it's crazy, these ones that take care of patients like this. I mean, there's so many nurses and stuff this day that have killed patients.
Oh, it happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. There was a respiratory therapist like myself that was doing it at one point. I might have to do a story on him.
There's been quite a few. It's actually a scary amount.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, so, there was a nurse that did the babies, too. I mean, it's just ugh.
So with this one, it's hard to say. So she behaved impeccably until the diagnosis. So what they can agree on is whether she went off the deep end because she thought she was dying and just did what she wanted to do, maybe not, or as a result of the failed surgery or successful surgery, however you view it.
Or she had a break.
That's what caused the change.
So he said there was a tumor, but there was no tumor.
I think he thought there was a tumor. I think he was being honest. But uh-huh. once he removed it, and it wasn't a tumor. There was a mass, but it wasn't a tumor. He didn't set her or her family straight. He just continued to let them believe there had been a tumor. So whether or not her belief that she was dying of a tumor caused this dramatic change, or the actual surgery
caused the change. Something pushing on a different part of the brain or whatever can really mess them up.
Getting in there and cutting open the head obviously could cause any number of – so it's hard to say –
What changed?
Whether the misdiagnosis or the surgery or who knows.
You know, they say when they put serial killers in the MRI, the different parts of their brain light up, you know, that show their emotion and everything than a normal person. So, totally plausible that something changed, you know?
Oh, I believe that 100%. So in 1980, she was declared insane and she would not stand trial for any of the crimes. She was sent to a psychiatric facility from which she was released in 1990. So she was only in there for 10 years for all that. That's a lot for only 10 years. She returned to her convent, where in her later years, she suffered from dementia and lived in a nursing home. How ironic is that? Now, fortunately, she was not her own nurse at the nursing home.
Yeah, right.
Because she ended up being in an exact facility where she abused those people. 30 years earlier.
She went to the same facility?
It didn't say that. Okay. I'm just assuming. But she became a patient in the exact type of facility that she was abusing her very own patients in.
Oh, wow.
She died in 2019 at the age of 86.
Gee, not that long ago.
No, not at all.
That's crazy. So
these two ladies are evil like none other.
That's good stories.
Scary. They're scary. Yeah, they're good stories, but they're scary. Dark. Those are the people you envision helping everybody, nuns and priests and all that stuff.
Well, they're supposed to be the good ones.
Yeah, they are. They're supposed to be. And then when they turn dark, it's extra scary because those are the people that are supposed to be in your corner in the hard times. And
when we were kids, when I lived in Wells here, the kids at the end of the street, their aunt was a nun, and we were throwing snowballs at them or whatever, and she came out. And she threatened to beat the shit. That was her words. She was going to beat the shit out of every one of us and stick our heads in the snowbank. She was not a nice nun.
When I was growing up, I didn't go to church a lot. Right? I don't have a lot of familiar with church. But I always thought nuns were scary. And in junior high, I had a nun that had left the convent or whatever. It was one of my junior high teachers. And she was mean. She was nice. She was a good teacher, I should say. She wasn't nice, but she was mean as shit, which further solidified the fact that I was a little bit scared of nuns.
I think what you hear from the kids who went to the Catholic school, they basically tell you those nuns were fucking vicious as hell.
Yeah.
They don't have a good rep, that's for sure.
So maybe when you get like one like this that's way off the charts mean, people just kind of expected? I mean, I don't know, because this is another time period entirely, but the fact that she got this many other nuns and just people to fall in line, nobody questioned her. If you listen to the story, at no point does a single other nun come out and chuck her under the bus or Raise a red flag.
It keeps going on after she leaves, that's after what I mean. She dies. Yeah, yeah, it's like she created that.
They're still hailing her as a saint to this day. And I mean, the woman's obviously a piece of shit.
Well, I noticed when I was pulling the pictures, there's pictures of her in a coffin, and they're carrying her like through the church, like they're still honoring her.
Yeah,
like she did nothing wrong.
She did something wrong. She did a lot of stuff wrong.
Absolutely.
A lot of people over there don't see it that way, but yeah, no, she was not a good person.
Wow, that's nuts. Well, good story, man.
Hope you guys like that. We've got a few listeners in Greece. I'm sure I fucked up a lot of those words. Don't be scared to give it to me. Let me know. Feel free. Send it in.
We've got some of those.
I'm not scared. Let me know. I'm sure I fucked them up. I tried my best. We're going to head over to the fire pit.
And if you guys have any stories for us for the fire pit, remember, you can send them in to beyondtheshadows207@gmail.com. If you've sent some in and I haven't put them out there, it's probably because I have misplaced them. It's not because I wasn't putting them out, but there's a few I've been looking for and I have not been able to find. So if you've sent one in and it hasn't been played, send it again if you still have it. And I apologize. It's hard to keep track of some of this stuff sometimes. So, but if anyone's got any new stories, please send them in. Any of our socials, our email, anywhere. Any kind of story you got.
Hit us up, guys. I'd love to hear from you.
All right. Catch you in the fire pit. I guess you know what time it is. You're getting dragged to that fire pit. All right, so this week's fire pit comes from David. He is one half of the podcast, One Nothing. He does with Amanda. They have an amazing show. He'll tell you a little bit about it in his intro to his story. Go check it out, One Nothing. He also has a page on Instagram called Down the Rabbit Hole where he shares different paranormal and conspiracy kind of stuff, and it's amazing page.
Great show, great people.
Yeah,
guys, check them out.
Awesome. So this is his story. He sent it to us, and we're going to play it for you.
Hey, it's David from Down the Rabbit Hole, also co-host of One Nothing Podcast. So Down the Rabbit Hole is a page I created on Instagram that is pretty popular, luckily. I now have a Facebook, I have X, TikTok, YouTube, Threads, and collectively between all of those, I have about 82,000 going on 83,000 followers. So thank you to all my followers and friends and everyone out there. I really appreciate it. Down the Rabbit Hole was created back in July of 2021. I'm huge when it comes to the paranormal. I love everything about it. It fascinates me. And so with my girlfriend, my current girlfriend, we would watch these shows. And in these shows, I would find, you know, different paranormal events that I liked. And then there were some that I didn't like. And some of them that were quite boring. And I didn't enjoy watching a whole series of stuff where six or seven videos were not entertaining at all. And I thought, well, why don't I create one and put videos that only I want to watch? And so that's where Down the Rabbit Hole came from. And I pretty much post about 3 videos a day. Some of them are not real, I'm going to be honest with you, because I am not an expert. I can't tell with today's technology, you know, just on one viewing if it's real or not. If it creeps me out, it's going to go on. That's how I look at it now. Before, I was very big into making sure it was, you know, it has to be real. But let me tell you, doing this for as long as I've been doing this, forget it. It's not going to happen. You're not going to be able to do that. And it's going to take too long, and people want to be entertained today. So that's what I do. Also, One Nothing is a show I do with Amanda, who is the host, and Rachel, who is the other co-host. And One Nothing is all about true crime. It's all about animal attacks, and it's all about bizarre deaths. We also have a Survivors series, which we call One Something, that we do every 10 episodes. So we're up to episode 30 now, and so we have 3 One Something episodes where we interview survivors. Right now we're doing animal attacks, so that's 3 animal attack survivors. It's a great show. I'm very happy to be a part of it, and Amanda is fantastic. So I'm going to tell a story about the first time I actually astral projected out of my body. I was in my 20s. I was big into meditation. I want to say that I was good at it, but I was horrible at meditating. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And at the time, it was at, I was trying to follow the method where you empty your mind completely, which is not something I do now, but I failed over and over and over again at meditating, and I was getting very frustrated because I really wanted to accomplish this, and I couldn't. So I made it a deal to do it every single day at the same time, and I thought, if I can at least be consistent in that, which is like I am with Down the Rabbit Hole, consistently putting 3 videos a day in the morning, something might happen. So one day, I'm sitting on the floor, Indian style, and I am trying to meditate. And something happened for the first time ever. I felt like I floated up. That was the first thing. And when I noticed that was happening, I was able to look down and I could see the back of my head. I was like looking at my body, and I had never seen the back of my head from that vantage point. It was bizarre to see that. And I didn't know what the hell was going on, but I felt something and I heard something, like it was my mind saying to my body, basically, fuck you, I'm out, fuck your problems, I'm out of here. And my spirit started to turn like it was going to get the hell out. And I was so confused by what was happening. And then just like that, I was back in my body and completely freaked out. So I've had time to examine this, and I didn't understand what was going on. You know, and I was very Catholic at the time. I was a devout Catholic, which I am not now. But I have been reading and learning and trying to understand, and I think what it is, because I used to believe, I went all the way to atheist. I was an atheist for a while. And then I met my beautiful girlfriend, and we've been together for 5+ years, and I've been trying to learn, you know, different things. I've been reading these books, and this one book actually kind of explained that experience for me. And it was my soul was in my body, and that we actually, there's a place your soul goes to when you die, which is called the source. I'm not sure if that's 100% real. I don't know. I don't know anything that's completely 100% real as far as a religion, but I think that my body wasn't doing what it needed to be doing at the time to elevate or raise my soul position. And I think that's why my soul was pissed off at my body, which makes total sense to me now, because, you know, at the time I was an angry young man, and now I'm not. And I'm not sure if my soul still hates me or not, but I totally get that now. It totally makes 100% sense to me. And that's it. So I just wanted to thank Scott and Ryan. You guys are great. Love the show. Thank you, Scott, for listening to One Nothing. We really appreciate it, and supporting Down the Rabbit Hole. You've been a big supporter, and we are very grateful for that. Thanks, guys. Till next time.
All right. Thanks for the story, David. That's crazy. I have messed around with the Astro, trying to travel the astral plane. Have you ever messed with that?
No.
The out-of-body experience stuff? Yeah. I remember exactly what David's talking about. You start with like meditation, and you got to like kind of relax all the muscles in your body and everything. I read a book about it too. I think Albert Beckel, it was Soul Traveler or something like that. I'm going to mess it up, but it's just like he's saying. And I always got to the point, I can't get things out of my head. I can't clear my head.
I find traveling on a regular plane weird enough. Fuck the astral plane.
I would love, the astral plane sounds awesome. It sounds way better than this plane.
On the astral plane, I want 3 bags of peanuts.
But anyways, I'd try it, and I know what he's talking about. I just could never keep my mind clear. But I did get to the point a couple times where I felt like I was falling backwards out of my body, and then that like scared me enough. Like, you know, it's like that sensation like you're falling and then snap right back in. So I never got where David was at, but
thanks for that story, David.
That was crazy. Yeah, we really do. We appreciate the story. We appreciate you taking the time to record it for us. So check out their podcast, the One Nothing Podcast. Go on Instagram, check out Down the Rabbit Hole. It's an awesome page. It's an awesome podcast. They're great people, and we appreciate it very much, guys. And we are going to wrap it there, and we will catch you in the next one.
Later, guys.